everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. This is a crew that you will be hearing a lot from in the regular season. It is myself, Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. It is also my steady partner from last year that I'm happy to be working with again, Andrew Dewhurst. How are you in the great up norte, Andrew?
I'm doing well enough, just surviving some freezing rain, but can't complain. Baseball season's just around the corner.
Yeah, I believe you're probably getting the freezing rain that we got recently, which basically just landed on your windshield as a sheet of ice, which is very, very pleasant. And we also have a brand new partner in crime, and his name is Gabe Zammit. Gabe, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Actually, it is Gabe Zammit. So hopefully, it's funny. Andrew and I were just talking about that beforehand. It does look like Zammit. It's Zammit, and I'm doing good, man. I am in the Chicagoland area, so I'm getting all that freezing rain too. And I'm ready for spring and baseball and all that stuff.
Yeah, we are all ready for it, but it hasn't exactly happened yet. And before we started, I actually planned on this, and Andrew certainly knows we are rarely a current events show, per se. But one thing I wanted to mention is it occurred to me, and I think it offers some insight, that before this offseason, the only teams that we knew were really okay with the idea of having a 10-year, $300 million-plus contract on their team were the Marlins, who signed Stanton, and the Yankees, who took on his contract. And when is the last time that the baseball market agreed with the Yankees or the Marlins? So that is my sort of reactionary take to what's happening late in this offseason. Gabe Zammit, you did not give us your Twitter feed. I would like you to do that. Everyone knows to follow you.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, and it's just at Gabe Zammit. So that's GABEZAMMIT.
All right. And Andrew Dewhurst, Andrew K. Dewhurst. Why don't you give us your Twitter feed as well?
Certainly, it is at Andrew K. Dewhurst.
Yeah, even though I follow Andrew on Twitter and see him do some stuff, it's one of those things. It's like having a number on speed dial. You forget it over time. Our activity for today was trying to come up with some of the best draft bargains that we have, and the ones that we like the most. And interestingly enough, I sent off my list, and then I told these guys to create a list, and I just sort of wanted to react to it on the fly. I didn't really want to have a bunch of studying in ahead of time to think about it. And ironically enough, the first person I put on the list is the one that maybe I'm having the most misgivings about, and that is 33-year-old relief pitcher Blake Parker. There's certain things that I really, really like about Parker's profile, about where he landed, and the situation that he's in. But I do notice that the market is a little more split than I am on if Blake Parker's really got the gig or not. So what do you guys think about Blake Parker as sort of a draft value within the closer landscape going into this season? Or are you on Team Trevor May? Why don't we start with you, Gabe?
So relief pitcher is awful this year. And I don't mind Parker. I actually think that he got kind of a bad rap. Personally, I'm going to be going a little earlier on relief pitcher, but for where he's going, I don't mind him. I don't mind taking him, but my draft philosophy this year is I'm going to go a little earlier on relief pitcher.
Well, one of the things I could say is definitely in Blake Parker's benefit is signing a shorter term deal, not one that's going to affect future arbitration years like you have with Trevor May. And also that he's been pretty steady. I looked all the way back to, the 2013, 2014. He's been a 60-inning reliever. And we're going to find out if some of the quirkiness in his usage was more a function of what happened under Mike Socha, or if it was the way it should be. I mean, as far as control goes, he seems to be a pretty good control pitcher. He did have a dip in his strikeouts last year, which I know a bunch of stat heads will not like at all. But what do you think, Andrew? Are you big on Blake Parker this year?
I doubt that I'm going to be I just think there's way too much confusion in who the actual owner of that role is going to be, because I think there's also a third name to be thrown out there, and that's Addison Reed, who could also end up with that job. Because, I mean, I guess if I'm going to make the investment, I would rather invest in somebody I 100% know has the job, even if it's on a much worse team. Because, I mean, as we've seen year in and year out, there are always somebody who's going to get 30 saves on a terrible team.
Well, I think that's definitely true. The interesting thing to me, if I was going to speak on behalf of Blake Parker here, like I said, one thing I like is they seem to have brought in a closer in recent years, like they did with Fernando Rodney last year. And I also think Addison Reed was terrible last year. And I didn't do a deep dive into Addison Reed, but he's a guy who, you know, we thought was going to be a long-term closer way back 4 or 5 years ago, then didn't get the gig. It seems like it's the Blake Parker situation has sort of been amping up for him to be a closer. And he was never used exclusively as such in Anaheim. But I also want to point out that people were in love with Blake Parker going into recent seasons to be a full-time closer, and somehow or another, Bud Norris or this, that. And he hasn't been – he's been a bit streaky, so that plays against him as well. But I do think he's the guy that they would prefer to get the gig. And I also think that he's in the right division to win a lot of extra games with everything that goes on in the AL Central, which is something I'm sure we'll talk about further. Anyway, why don't we start with you, Gabe? Did you pick out a relief pitcher that you thought was an especially good bargain this year?
Yeah, I did. Actually, so, you know, like I had said, I'm kind of looking at my relievers a little earlier just because this year, more than any I can remember in recent history, it seems like the closer market just is really muddled. You know, there's those top guys, and then there's just a ton of confusion. A lot of teams that aren't necessarily making it very clear who their guy is. And there's some teams that are doing that strategically because they're wanting to use guys like Hader in a more valuable role than just, you know, the stereotypical closing role. So that being said, the guy that I like is Jose Alvarado in Tampa Bay. He's going right around 171, right after guys like Corey Knebel and Ken Giles, and just before David Robertson and Cody Allen. And there's always the fear, I think, with Tampa Bay pitchers that that Tampa Bay is going to use them and showcase them and then flip them. And I don't know if I see them doing that with Alvarado just because of his age. This is his sophomore year. You know, he struck out a lot of guys last year, 11.25 K9. And I think if he gets those walks down, he's going to be a steal at the price he's going at.
Well, I think people very, very quietly are not recognizing that Sergio Romo is sort of the guy who kept Alvarado from getting the full-time gig last year. And he is still a free agent and certainly does not look like he's returning to the Rays. So that definitely adds to the value of Alvarado in and of itself. Also, I would say the Charlie Morton trade or signing, plus the fact that the Rays are going for it a little bit more, helps his team context. How do you feel about Jose Alvarado as a good late game closer choice there, Andrew?
Yeah, I like that choice. Really nice K for nine last year, 11 and a quarter. Still pitched 64 innings for you. So even if he somehow doesn't end up as the guy with the job, he's still going to deliver you some value as an extra reliever. If you want to, you know, if that's the kind of guy you want to keep on. Tampa does have a history of, you know, taking guys and flipping them, but I agree. It's usually a few years in. They want to usually wait till they're closer to their arbitration years. So if the job is going to be Alvarado's, I think that's a great value. And a guy that could hand you somewhere between 30 and 40 saves for a relatively low cost.
Yeah, I mean, if I was going to speak against Alvarado, which I certainly like where he's getting drafted, and I certainly am glad that we are talking about him. I think one thing that Gabe mentioned in his intro is there's a number of teams that seem to be using their bullpen atraditionally. And as atraditional staffs go, it appears that the Rays are right up there. At this sort of draft position, if he's a guy who's got really steady production and, say, only ends up in the low to mid-20s with saves, he's still somebody who could help you chip in. And one thing we haven't really done is frame this perfectly. Number one, meaning that we're not saying that you should go into the season thinking Jose Alvarado is your answer for saves in a roto league in and of himself, or somebody that you should buoy your relief staff with. We're trying to look at players that we think are really good bargains compared to their ADP and what you could get out of them. I certainly am not suggesting that Blake Parker be be the guy who sets you up in a full season-long league where it's going to be difficult to rotate people in and out. One thing we're not saying about the market here is we're not mentioning the fact that all this uncertainty means in leagues where you're going to be able to pick up a lot of players during the season, I think you're going to see that there's probably maybe 10 or 11 closing jobs right now that we don't really know which way they're going to go. So of those, probably 7 or 8 of them, even in the first month or two of the season, are going to end up being people that you can go and try and pick up via FAB or via waivers, depending on how it works. Why don't you throw another name out there for us here, Andrew, and tell us who you like at RP.
Sure. The guy I picked was David Robertson, going off at pick 238. Looks like he's going to be the closer in Philadelphia. And I think Philadelphia is a team that could win about, somewhere probably between 85 and 90 games, which should leave him with lots of save opportunities. I think he's oddly a bit of a forgotten man because he hasn't had saves in a couple years while he was in New York, but he's been a very good closer in the past while he's with the White Sox, and I think there's good reason to believe that he's definitely still that same guy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are starting to come around on him, and some of his ADP, I mean, we're only going back to January 1st, but some of his ADP that you guys will see out there is from before we knew exactly where he was going to go. A lot of people sort of assumed he was going to be back in New York, which was going to hurt him in saves leagues, but not necessarily saves plus holds or holds leagues. Gabe, I've heard a bit of buzz going on about David Robertson, so it doesn't surprise me. How do you feel about him this year?
Yeah, actually, David Robertson was my pick, and I changed it last minute to Alvarado. So I'm totally on board with that, too. I like him this year. I think, it's kind of like you were saying, Chuck, if it just depends on the draft price. We only know so much about the price right now. So if it stays around where it is, I think he's a great bargain. If he starts to shoot up the board because, Philly signs Harper or Machado or, something else, and so then their guys start to get more buzz, then I might back off a little bit. But where he's going right now, he's a bargain for sure.
I mean, yeah, I would make the case that, like, even should he move up 50 draft spots, he's still a relatively good value even at, like, the 180 to 200 range.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the skill set is, irrefutable. I think that's for sure. The only thing that's sort of half depressing him is a lot of the people out in Statland, like Sir Anthony Dominguez's rise, like they think he's an ultra special reliever. Of course, that could very well mean that they want to use him in the seventh or the eighth. So there's still, I would say, a little cloud, but I mean, that cloud is definitely put into the price in where you're getting Robertson. And worst case scenario, it's a situation I think where they're going to sort of split the job, and Robertson has proven himself to be quite valuable even when he's not getting saves on the present landscape that we have for pitching. So I think those were all pretty interesting people to speak of. Now I'm going to change it up a little bit, and we're going to go back to Gabe, and Gabe's going to give us his catcher that he thinks is the best bargain.
So catcher sucks this year. And I think that's not really a secret. A lot of people know there's, once you get past the first four or five catchers, it's a wasteland. Now, I think part of that is going to, I don't believe that the catcher position is going to be as bad this year as it was last year. But with that being said, the guy that I like as a bargain, if I'm going to go on catcher early-ish, it's going to be Wilson Contreras. And a big part of that is I think that Contreras is one of the guys who we know he's got a guaranteed role. We know that the floor should be pretty high, I think, because he walks and because he gets hits. The knock on him was his power disappeared last year. So he's young enough to me that I think the power could rebound a little. If he gets some more barrels on the ball, I see him, you know, definitely returning more value than where he's going right now in the drafts, which, you know, is 136. That's his pick right now.
Well, I can certainly see a strong argument here for Contreras. Why don't you add to the argument or argue against, Andrew? How do you feel about Wilson Contreras this year?
Not really. So I haven't really been in on Contreras over the years. A lot of that's just been the inconsistency, right? Like, I don't know if I want to pay the price for Contreras if I'm only going to get what he did last year. And I'm not certain I can completely rule that out. I mean, I think if you feel like you're going to get 2016 or 2017 Wilson Contreras, who's going to deliver you a pretty good average, walk at a decent clip, and hit home runs, then yeah, value's okay. I mean, you're still paying like a top 150 price. So, I mean, but if you end up with like 2018, 10 home run, 250 average Wilson Contreras, you're going to look at that pick later on and go, I probably should have gone somewhere else.
Well, I mean, on his side, I do see the fact that he's chipped in for more steals than you almost ever get from a catcher. I also think from a team context, I think it's pretty likely that the Cubs have a bounce back season offensively. I mean, really, it's been noted in a number of places that somehow or another, Javi Baez is really the only Cub who had a good year within their range of possibilities last year. So there seems to be a bounce back forthcoming, especially if Chris Bryant's shoulder goes along for the long haul here. So Contreras is a guy that, again, I also like to look at players like this who everybody liked, and now because they had a hiccup in their development, all of a sudden people are off of them. I think it's more likely that Contreras hits at least 16 or 17 home runs than hits, you know, lower than 10 or 12 home runs. And as Gabe so rightfully pointed out, catcher is so difficult to strategically decide how you're going to go into it. Part of the reason that I ended up with my pick at catcher is because I know in the back of my head that I'm not going to be able to pull the trigger on taking a catcher in the first four or five rounds. And I would add to my argument by saying that in recent years, the catchers that you take in the first four or five rounds have frequently disappointed. You know, we've run into some injury problems with Buster Posey. We've definitely had a large hiccup in the development of Gary Sanchez. You know, and a lot of that was injury related, I gather. But there's just this upper tier of catcher. It's not that I don't like them compared to the other catchers. I'm just finding it difficult for me to see how I'm going to pull the trigger early enough to get in the Gary Sanchez category or above because of how much I like the other players that are going there. You know, and because you're going to have a certain amount of people, especially in a 15-team league, that are deciding that they have to address catcher that early. And my gut reaction, like apparently Gabe's is as well, my gut reaction is I'm not going to take a third round pick and spend it on Gary Sanchez, you know, who's not all that proven and you're not going to get any speed. My goal in the early rounds is going to be to build up power and speed and cover the weaker areas while I do it, which you'll see as I go forward. So I did some poking around, and there's definitely some danger in the catcher that I picked for a good value. We haven't necessarily talked a lot about the ADP of these players, so I'd like one of you guys to sort of look at the ADPs of these catchers that we're going to choose. My catcher is Danny Jansen of the rebuilding Toronto Blue Jays. You know, a 23-year-old player who's got excellent plate skills in the minors, showed more pop last year than he had shown before. I also think they could end up being a team that has a little more offense than we take them for going into the season, especially if they get much out of Teoscar and if Justin Smoke sort of presents himself as a good trade target as the season goes on. Kevin Pillar, who's a guy me and Andrew disagreed with last year, is coming off a pretty decent season for him. Anyway, I wonder what you guys are thinking about Danny Jansen. How do you feel about him, Andrew?
I like Danny Jansen. Nice draft value, I think, if you're playing upside at 230. I agree. It's a good place to hit. It's in a park full of, or it's in a division full of great places to hit. The question I guess I'm left with is he going to, how much time is he going to get? How are the Blue Jays going to split the job between him and Luke Maley? And then, you know, from there, it's like, does he hit, how much of that potential does he get to tap into this year? But again, like, there's lots of room for value with him. I mean, Roster Resource right now has him batting ninth, but I think if he gets off and plays well, he could, you know, he could certainly move up as high as probably six, if not higher than that, in that order, which means you should get some nice opportunities. And you're also looking at a lineup that should add Vlad Guerrero Jr. to it, hopefully, I guess, by June 1st. So I think there's reason to be optimistic on Jansen. And at that price, you might as well, right? Like, I mean, it's catcher. It's a, to say the least, it's a dumpster fire. And you're just trying to grab the piece that's the least amount on fire for the most part.
The 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide, The Fantasy Benefit, is the largest and most complete fantasy draft guide on the market. With featured writers from Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Baseball HQ, Baseball Prospectus, and Fangraphs, and many more, you will get tons of information on how to start your own league, draft strategies for roto, points, categories, NFBC, best ball, and DFS. There are tiers for every position, and 30 team previews, including 30 team prospect previews, breaking down the top prospects from each team. There are ranks for every position, for prospects, for first-year player drafts. This is the most in-depth guide that fantasy baseball has to offer. And not only that, we'll be updating it all draft season in the ebook and PDF. You can get this on Amazon.com in ebook form for $7.50 or in paperback for $13.99. Don't want an ebook? Don't want a paperback? Just want a PDF? You can order it by emailing friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com and I will send you an updated copy every week until the start of opening day. Get your 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide called The Fantasy Benefit today.
Yeah, I mean, a regression in sort of his plate skills doesn't appear to put him below replacement value by any means. So there is sort of that in his profile. Gabe, how did you feel about Danny Jansen when you saw his name come across to you as somebody I sort of liked as a value?
Yeah, I agree with everything Andrew said. What I'm looking at too, so looking at ADP, you know, they also, the cool thing about NFBC is they'll show the min pick, so where these guys are going and where they're going maximum in the drafts. And that what's interesting about that is you've got a lot of these catchers that are, the Jansen being the example here. So his pick is 214. That's his average. But he's gone as high as 95, which, you know, is, that's the thing for me, is it's all about value. And Danny Jansen and then Williams Estudillo, those two guys have been getting so much buzz, and they are like these trendy catchers, you know, quote sleepers. If they keep creeping up the boards, that's when I'm going to be out. Right now, yes, I'm totally in on a guy like Danny Jansen.
Yeah, it seems like because the Twitter footage hasn't quite been in his direction as much as it has been to Estudillo, It will be interesting to see what happens. I also felt last year that maybe Luke Maley was a guy who had for returning value, especially in two catcher leagues. So it's not without risk, but it doesn't take very long to realize that catcher is going to come with risk.
Oh, absolutely.
You're either paying way up to try and be safe, or you're going to play with risk. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about that, I don't think. That's a very good point about Danny Jansen and about, I can't fathom him going in the top 100 with a 31 game sample at the major league level. But
oh no, of course
it's
not.
It's catcher. So, you know, I guess one never knows what could happen by the time March gets here. So anyway, I want to quickly review just one thing for my own reasons as well. That's what do we have for a Wilson Contreras ADP right now?
His ADP is 136 and his max pick is 92. Or his minimum pick, sorry, his min pick is 92.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, it's not in my head in the top 100 picks to take on this much risk at this position. That doesn't mean it's not the right strategy because, you know, Wilson Contreras is, you know, a guy who was claiming he was the best catcher in baseball last year, right about this time. It just didn't play out that way last year, but he's in a pretty good spot to succeed. So I can see that. I believe we have a catcher to go over with Mr. Dewhurst. So what do you think about catchers?
Yeah, I'm also, in this case, I'm also dropping way down the board and that is because I just don't believe in catcher. I'm looking at Robinson Chirinos at pick 270. With I think moving over to the Astros is a nice landing spot for him. And he's a guy that in his time in Texas had produced reasonably well. So I think in most cases in a single catcher league, I'm more than happy to wade into that nearly till I'm almost done point to grab a catcher. Obviously, I mean, your strategy is going to be a little bit different in two catcher. I don't think you're going to want to wait to 270 to grab your first catcher there. But, I like Chirinos coming into this here in Houston.
Most of the questions that I've heard about Chirinos, a lot of them have been to do with his glove more so than his bat, which, you know, you're talking about a guy who's got 35 home runs over the last couple of years. That's pretty decent in the vacant landscape of catching. That's pretty decent in and of itself. His walk rate looks pretty good in recent years. We love to see that. But there's some obvious batting average risk, and there's some defensive risk. I mean, I don't know how the Astros as an organization feel about Max Stassi, but they don't seem to have completely grasped a hold of him as somebody who's going to get a major chunk of the time. So I agree with the Chirinos pick here. You know, I do like to look at team context, and boy, the Astros are a team that offers a large pillow insurance plan when it comes to the people around him. Gabe, what do you think about Robinson Chirinos?
I'm on board. I totally agree. If my plan would be generally to wait at catcher, and if I'm waiting, I'm looking at a guy like Chirinos. I'm looking at another guy like Narvaez. Those are the types of guys that I'd rather roll the dice on late, so I can kind of stack my team elsewhere early.
Yeah, there's a lot of sense in that. I'm just curious. Does somebody have the min pick for Chirinos? Because it seems like
200.
Yeah, I've got it at 175 since January 1st.
Well, that's significantly different than 92 and 95 that we heard on some of these other catchers. So I agree completely with Chirinos being a wonderful way to lower the risk investment that there is at catcher this year. I'm going to get a little soapboxy on my next player that I'm going to throw out there. And I used Cody Bellinger as a first baseman. And I'm sort of lost on why. It's not like he's going really late in drafts, but at the same time, I'm lost as to why he's not going even higher. And let me present this case for him. He's 23 years old. His stolen bases are on the rise. He's got a decent power floor. I don't think he's going to hit less than 22, 23 home runs in any case. And he's got this very coveted, for me, flexibility of first base and outfield. He's also someone who has shown big power surges in the past at the major league level. And he's also someone who plays on a very strong contender that seems to do whatever they have to do to keep him on the field. I'm lost as to, I hear people taking first baseman ahead of Cody Bellinger, and I am literally dumbfounded at some of the guys that are going in front of him. I don't know exactly what else you could want in an early pick outside of the fact that, I mean, we'd love to see his batting average be closer to, you know, the 265, 270 range than it was last year. But I think Cody Bellinger is a ridiculous steal where he's going right now in drafts. How do you feel about that, Gabe?
I like Bellinger a lot. I don't know if I would say he's a steal. He's a guy I think is going, I think he's going appropriately where he's at. And the reason I would say that is just because we don't really know what type of power he does have. So that early, that's tough for me. The optimist in me, because I personally like him as a player a lot. So it's hard for me to place my bias aside, but I just like him, and I could see him, you know, getting 35 home runs, but the numbers point away from that a little bit. If you go over to his Baseball Savant page and you look at his barrels and just his hard hit, that kind of decreasing last year from his really, you know, breakout 2017, that's where I feel conflicted, you know. But I like him. I think he's going appropriately. I don't know if I'd say he's a bargain.
Well, it should be noted that early in drafts, especially at positions where I don't feel real comfortable at, when the flexibility of a player goes there, first base and the outfield is right up there for me personally, in something that I want to feel like I've given myself some wiggle room, because I feel like I'm going to be taking some gambles at those positions. So I'm probably baking that more into the equation than you fellows are. Let's see if that's true. What do you think here, Mr. Dewhurst?
I think I sit somewhere in the middle of the two of you. So I do believe that he's going in an appropriate spot. And right now that's pick about 46 on average. That's his ADP, 45.82. So, I mean, you're looking at, you know, first three rounds, and I think that's appropriate. I mean, I think he's a player that's worth taking there. I mean, if you want to just look at his projections alone, he sits somewhere around, you know, between 31 and 36 home runs, between 10 and 16 steals. If you get the optimist side of that, you're going to be really happy at pick 46. If you get the pessimist side of that, which is like 31 and 11 with a 255-ish average, I think you're probably still going to be pretty happy with what you got. So as a value, I don't know if I love him as a value, but I do like him as a pick where he's going.
Yeah, and again, like for some reason in my head, I think to myself that creating more options of how you're going to play the positions that you're worried about really is something I look to do a lot early in drafts. And so I am openly admitting I am probably putting too much value on him being first base and outfield eligible. And if you use him at first base and the trend continues, and say he were to steal between 17 and 20 bases, you know, which he appears to be getting more comfortable as a thief on the bases, boy, that seems to be a huge advantage in the speed landscape. And I think that's the biggest area to me that's getting that no one's looking at. I mean, where are you going to get 15 stolen bases at first base?
Oh, I agree, because you're not, like, outside of Goldschmidt, I don't know, like, there's very few guys who are going to give you any steals at first base. But I mean, I think relative to value, if you are trying to build up home runs and steals and you're not too worried about the average, you could wait about 60 picks and get Joey Gallo, who is going to give you, like, who's who's projected to give you between 40 and 50 home runs and give you between 6 and 8 steals with like about a 25% loss or a 25 point loss in batting average. So I think it kind of comes down to how you want to carve the pumpkins per se in this case.
Yeah, there can be an argument made for that. I think there's a possibility that Bellinger, being 23 years old and with the history that we have from him, I think there's a halfway decent chance that he could hit 285, 280 even. And obviously, I think Joey Gallo's average is capped well below that. And team contextually via the team, you know, Texas is kind of a mess in their entire lineup. But sometimes that can work in the favor of a hitter as well, because you know he's going to be, you know, buoyed in the middle of such a lineup. So I can see that.
Yeah. The other thing on his side too is he does get to play in what actually seems to be the best hitter's park in the league, which is actually in Texas. That certainly helps his value as well. If you're going to go down that road.
That's true as well. We can argue it from either side, can we not? Why don't we go to you now, Andrew? Who are you looking at first base?
Sorry, I'm just experiencing some minor technical issues. I'm looking at Jake Bowers at pick 251. Got moved over to Cleveland. Showed some power in his time with Tampa. You know, moving over to essentially a AAA division from where he was last year in Tampa is, I think, a nice reason for me to dream on him being more consistent this year, considering there's almost no talent in the starting pitching in that division outside of his own team. So I think he's a guy much later in the draft who you could get you can dream on at least a 20 home run, 10 steals season from, and give you that same first base and outfield eligibility.
There's definitely, you are not alone on this take on Jake Bowers. How do you feel about Jake Bowers, Gabe?
I think as a corner, I would love him. I don't think that's what you're saying, Andrew, but I wouldn't want him as my starting first baseman. Yes, I totally agree. I think you draft him and you hope for that 20 home run plus type upside. The tough thing with Bowers is just his batting average. So if he can figure that out, then I think that's for sure within the realm of possibility. And he's young, so there's just a lot we don't know, and where he's going, I love it.
Yeah, I mean, he did have a 252 BABIP last year, which traditionally he's a relatively high BABIP guy for a first baseman type, for sure. You know, he's been into the 330s, 340s before in his profile. So there's a lot to like there as well. I think this is a very good high upside pick. I think people are a little concerned. This is one situation where I think moving lineup wise might not help him a lot. Just because, you know, you got these the Santana types and Lindor, and you've got really good offensive players around him that are probably going to keep him out of the middle of the lineup, which could hurt him in some of his counting stats. But at the same time, everything that people have been hailing Bowers for, and all the surprise that came across that the Rays were willing to trade him for Yandy Diaz, makes him a very intriguing pick moving to the AL Central. Gabe, who's your first baseman of choice?
Okay, so my first baseman is a little out there. It's Jurickson Profar. And here's my thought process behind it. For me personally, I'm looking at my teams and my team construction, and I'm trying to get some power and speed early. And I know you had mentioned that, Chuck, too, but If I don't get Goldschmidt or Freeman or, you know, Rizzo, Bellinger with one of my first picks, then I'm going to try and get Profar, and I'm going to load up on some of those other power bats early, or, you know, get a specialist or something. And the reason I love Profar is his versatility. So he is Right now he's going as about the 12th first baseman off the board, but he's eligible at shortstop, third base, first base, and he's going to get second in Oakland. So you look at Profar, this is a guy who he's turning 26 this year. Let me double check that. Yeah, he turns 26. He was a former top prospect, and a lot of people, I think, have been burned by him. And from what I've seen, there's kind of a growing contingent of people who are starting to buy back in. But the price to me is right. And so you can get a guy who's not going to hurt you in any category. He's going to get you hopefully 18 to 20-ish homers, maybe a little more. He's going to get you stolen bases, and you can slot him in at first and load up everywhere else. So it's a team construction thing. If you construct your team in that way, then I love him where he's going. If you don't get power somewhere else, then it's kind of stupid to take Jerickson Profar as your first baseman. You know, put him somewhere else, put him at second or something like that.
I think Profar is one of the most interesting draft values at a number of different positions. And I hear a lot of debate about looking into his batted ball profile and trying to decide exactly how to take everything. I mean, he's a guy who only had a 269 BABIP last year with sort of league average contact skills all the way around. And so you have this tendency to think that BABIP's going to go up. You know, he did steal 10 bases last year, and stolen bases looked like it was something that was diminishing from his profile. The move to Oakland, I think, is another thing that is going to get a couple different takes. It does not have the reputation of being as nice of a place to hit home runs as Texas was. And yet, at the same time, it's a lineup that really surprised a lot of people last year with how deep that lineup was. Andrew, what are your feelings on Jerickson Profar?
I don't really like Profar at that spot. I'm seeing his ADP at about 117, 118. And the reason why is that I feel like you're paying up probably higher than you should be for a guy that's gonna not. He's useful as a utility player on your fantasy team, but he's not really. Like, I just think you could spend your 120th pick in a better way. Like, I agree he's not going to hurt you anywhere. Like, it looks like he's projected to give you 12 to 20 home runs, steal 6 to 11 bases, and hit somewhere in the 260 range. I just think if you're buying flexibility at pick 120, there's probably going to be better ways to do it. So that kind of leaves me out on Profar here, that if I'm buying first base, like if I'm getting first base, I'm either probably trying to get one of the top guys that Gabe noted, or I'm probably just going to wait and push it down the road further.
Well, I mean, it would appear that first base is due for a bit of a bounce back. I think some people now are seeing first base and they're looking at it and they're thinking maybe it's going to go the way of the catcher, and I don't think that it's going to go the way of catcher long term. I do think guys like Jake Bowers and you know, even Ryan O'Hearn, and traditionally first base has produced a good offensive acumen. I think that's more than fair to say. I can see both sides of this argument for sure. I mean, the other thing we didn't really talk about is that Jerickson Profar was once considered the best minor league player in all of baseball. So there is some pedigree, and he ran into some fairly serious injuries when he first got to the majors. And so now it's the longest form of prospect fatigue or post-hype sleeper that I can remember in quite some time. Maybe going back to Alex Gordon, when Alex Gordon was a younger Royal and a third base prospect, if you will. So there will be some interesting takes on Jerickson Profar going forward. Surprisingly enough, as much as I love positional flexibility, I generally do not end up with the Swiss Army knife player like this. You know, I've rarely owned Marwin Gonzalez, you know, because I do think sometimes it can go too far the other way, meaning that all of a sudden, you know, the risks in a guy's profile are downplayed because of all the crazy amount of flexibility. And I have long time been on board that I'm not a true believer in Oakland, long term especially. And so so I sit sort of between you two guys, and that probably means I'm not going to get him. Because roster construction has gotten more and more important when there's been these areas that we're really, really concerned about trying to shore up as far as getting your team wholly looking like you want it to look. So I think that's an interesting player. Why don't we start with you, Andrew, on who you like at second base?
Second base, I have Cesar Hernandez, a guy that I feel like is always underrated. A guy who's going to give you a decent, typically has given you a decent average. And last year provided you with a little bit more home runs than you're probably expecting, and still handed you almost 20 steals. So right now his ADP is sitting around, I think 178 when I looked at it. So yeah, as a guy that's going to give you 15 home runs, just about 20 steals, and should hit somewhere, hopefully in the 260 to 270 range, I think is a nice value there for second base.
Well, the same things that depressed his value last year are sort of still at play in fantasy mindsets for these owners out there. I mean, you're still thinking that, well, Kingery is going to have to play for what they signed him for. And, you know, there's sort of this thing that because he doesn't have, you know, he doesn't have power upside, he doesn't have this sort of glimmer to him fantasy-wise, that people forget exactly how useful he can be within your team construct. So I really like this as a take on a second baseman that you can get far more value from than you initially think. How do you feel about it, Gabe?
I like him a lot, actually. I think Andrew made some good points, and the thing that he didn't mention but alluded to is he's going to see the at-bats. So last year he had 708 plate appearances, and I'm not worried about someone like Kingery cutting into his time or someone else. I know the Phillies have a lot of guys kind of waiting in the wings, but Cesar Hernandez, I think, is someone who's carved out that role in the playing time, and he's definitely a good value.
Yeah, I think he's a great value there as well. Gabe, who did you line up as a second baseman that you thought was being undervalued?
So my second baseman that I like as a bargain is Jonathan Villar. I think Jonathan Villar, he's someone who, you know, he's got that 60 stolen base season on his resume, and I don't think that's a guarantee or something I would bank on, but the skill is there. And when he got traded to Baltimore, he hit 8 home runs, he had 21 stolen bases and 209 at-bats. So, you know, I think sometimes Baltimore gets this rap for not letting guys run, and I don't think that's necessarily the case anymore. So the one knock on VR for me is his batting average. That's a concern, but I like him as someone who is a source of power and speed at my middle infield positions, and that's something I'm looking to get there.
What do we have for an ADP for VR? I just wonder how much the speed upside is.
Looks like I have him at 90.21 with a high pick of 47.
Ugh, I wouldn't take him there.
But I think that is an accurate reflection on like where people, how much people are valuing steals, at least in these early NFBC drafts.
Yeah, and I think people who haven't been around his performance swings as closely as I was when he was in Milwaukee might have a little less aversion to trusting him as a top 100 player. You want to think that there's a floor for a guy like this on a team like this, and there probably is. But sometimes that floor can protect you in a way. I mean, some of the years that he was in Milwaukee, you were delighted that he wasn't getting more at-bats because of exactly how much his waxing and waning plate skills can really be a detriment to your team. But at the same time, Gabe is pointing out the obvious, that it's also pretty enticing to think about if you can get him to hitting, you know, in the least in the 260s, that you can get an incredible speed source on a team like the Orioles that don't have any reason to give him a red light whatsoever. So I definitely agree that VR is a very interesting choice. I sort of cherry picked when it came to second base, in so much as I decided to go with Jose Altuve, which I think he's a guy who we're going to see his draft status go up quite a bit here going forward. I mean, he's got some incredible seasons on his resume already. He's on a very good team. And it seems unlikely that with the way the year went last year and with how he was nursing some injuries, that we're going to get as little out of Altuve, maybe in any year over the next 4 or 5 years, as we got last year. I know this is quite a bit more towards the top of the draft than the guys we've been speaking about. But Gabe, how do you feel about Jose Altuve as a draft bargain, even going what, late in the first, early in the second kind of guy?
Yeah, I like Altuve. He's another guy where, I don't know if I'd say he's a bargain, but he's one of the best second basemen in the majors. So if I had him on my team, I would not be complaining. I have no problem taking him where he's going.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously when you're talking about a guy who was taken as high as what, you know, the second or third pick in the draft quite recently, when you get him, you know, 14, 15, sometimes 17 picks later, that's a big deal. So how do you feel about it, Andrew?
I struggle with Altuve as a, like, essentially a first to second round value. I worry about the production, and that's just because of what he did last year. I mean, I know he's still relatively young. I think he's just 28. He'll be 29 in season. So there's maybe that's not necessarily founded. I just think from when I think about building that first piece or the first or second piece I'm adding into my team, I'm not getting elite home runs. I'm not getting elite steals. I am getting probably an elite average. So I guess it kind of comes down to how you're going to pair it. So I guess if you're going to start with an Altuve and then look at a guy like, you know, Bellinger a little bit like in the third, then maybe it starts to make some more sense, right? Because you're balancing out that average with a lower one. Or if you're going to go Gallo closer to pick 100, you know, if you're going to push up that pick a little bit for yourself, then I think it starts to make some more sense. But as a standalone guy, I couldn't see myself targeting him with like the 16th pick in that range.
Yeah, I mean, the investment cost is definitely sky high here when you're taking him in front of guys like Bryce Harper and, you know, some premium talents. And it's also sort of enticing to me that he's been that premium talent as well very recently. And I think the lineup really helps, you know, helps add to his ceiling. So where are you on Mr. Altuve, Gabe?
Oh, yeah. No, I like him. I like him. You know, it's like I said, I don't know if he's someone I'm targeting, but I would not mind taking him and, you know, having him on my team. There's probably some other guys in that area I'd rather have.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be interesting because I think at some level you're going to see people sort of late in the first round. They have to sort of balance it out because although the talent is still sky high there, it's sort of plateaued a little. It starts to plateau a little bit when you get towards the end of the first round in a 15-team league. And in a 15-team league, you also have to worry a lot about what you're going to get, for how you're going to start covering stolen bases and how you're going to cover second base. Well, we kind of went through the first half of our list here of bargains. As far as us sort of going around the horn here. So we'll have starting pitcher and third base and shortstop and outfield to cover next week for you guys. But I do think just covering players and just thinking about players in different ways is one of the best things that you can do for your draft prep or while your draft and hold league drafts are kind of going on now. That's sort of the part of the off season that we're at now. So anyway, Gabe, why don't you let us know again where you can be reached on Twitter and if you're working on anything special for us. And why don't you give us a little bit on your background, too, since This is the first time we've had a chance to talk with you.
Oh, yeah. So I, again, can be found on Twitter at Gabe Zamit. So G-A-B-E-Z-A-M-M-I-T. And, you know, I'm not working on anything in particular right now, just kind of trying to stay on top of keeping our wonderful draft guide updated, because I did the White Sox and Oakland A's previews, and then I also did the top 100 outfielders. So I'm just trying to make sure I'm staying on top of that, and then prepping kind of for my own drafts, and then podcasting with you gentlemen here. So those are the main things that I'm kind of working on and doing right now.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but whenever I start talking about what I'm doing, I kind of feel like a slacker, just because Justin does this Herculean load of things. But just sort of keeping up and doing stuff like this does add to our stress levels plenty in and of itself, in an enjoyable way, I suppose. How's everything going with you, Andrew? How's the hockey season going for you? And give us your Twitter feed again.
Yeah, you can find me at Andrew K. Dewhurst. About 6 weeks left in the hockey season, maybe a little less, as we are now in about a week into February. Otherwise, yeah, I've got three teams to stay on top of for the draft guide, running some TGFBI mock drafts. So staying busy, to say the least. Haven't written too much for baseball quite yet, but I'm kind of starting to dig into that real draft prep. So you'll probably see me start to drop some more articles on that in the coming weeks as well.
Well, just to add to what they've mentioned, the Fantasy Benefit is continuing to do very well as a pre-draft document that people really should take a look at. I mean, you're getting an excessive amount of coverage all the way down to, you know, 10, 12 prospects deep on most every team, and you're getting a living document that's getting updated all the time. I also am sort of bracing myself now for both my first draft and hold of the offseason and TGFBI, which is, I think, one of the more interesting sets of mock drafts that are sets of drafts that you can possibly look at for ADP, since it's turns out to be an accumulation of industry minds for the upcoming season. So, and again, I'm Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at just chucking it on the Twitter machine. And this is the first of many podcasts that you're going to hear with this three-man crew. I know for myself, I'm really excited about Andrew and I having a third voice in the mix. And Gabe did wonderfully in his maiden voyage here. So it was our pleasure, to say the least. So keep supporting Friends with Fantasy Benefits. We are as active as almost any distributor of information as far as the fantasy baseball hobby is concerned, and we will keep doing everything we can to do so. So we will be back at you next week to talk about more bargains at the positions we didn't cover this week, and hopefully we get these players running through your heads and trying to develop exactly how you feel about these guys and the whole group of fantasy players in general. Thanks again. This was a Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.